All right, thank you. So good afternoon, my name is Ben Zorn. I'm gonna be talking about Nozzle, a defense against heap spraying attacks. And this is joint work with Peruj Watanaworoban from Cornell University and Ben Lifshitz, who works my colleague at Microsoft Research. So first let me tell you about heap spraying. Heap spraying is a big problem. If you haven't looked on the web recently, you'll see that there are many instances of heap spraying. This is an attack reported July 14th in 2009 against Firefox. There was an attack in February against Adobe Reader and Adobe Acrobat using heap spraying. And finally, there have been reported attacks against Flash using ActionScript, all using heap spraying. And so what is heap spraying? I'll talk about that in a minute. The common element here, though, is all these applications support embedded scripts, and there are scripts that come from a third party, from an untrusted external party. So let me give you a high-level view of how heap spraying works, and that'll help motivate what we do to try to prevent it. This is a very typical drive-by web attack. The idea is that you have an attacker who's got web content. They deliver it to your browser, and without any action on the part of the user, the browser becomes exploited, basically corrupted. And if we drill down a little bit, we can see how this happens. Typically, the attacker has a web page that includes some script, and then maybe some other aspect of the web page that sort of triggers a known exploit in the browser. And then on the left here, I'm showing the program heap. So the first part of the exploit involves the attacker finding a way to put malicious code somewhere in the program heap. Often it was done putting it on the stack. That's easier in some respects. More and more Stack Overflow mitigations have prevented this, and so the attackers go after the heap. Now, of course, in a web page, this is quite easy because the attacker can just create a string in JavaScript, and that's what I'm showing here, and the content of the string can be interpreted as code if you choose to, in which case all the attacker then has to do is figure out how to jump to that code. And the second part of the attack is some known exploit, a buffer overflow, a dangling pointer, a heap, et cetera, that causes the program counter to jump to that malicious code, and now you've been compromised. So this has been a problem for a while. This is a typical heap-based malicious attack, and in fact, operating systems have attempted to prevent this. So this is one of the prevention mechanisms is ASLR, address-based randomization, in which case the attacker now doesn't know where that specific copy of their malicious code is. And so the attack might succeed, but in a given run, the heap is randomized, and so you don't necessarily know what to do. And this is what motivates heap spraying. It's very simple to go from this particular scenario to the next scenario, where we've increased the script a little bit. Before, we just had the attacker with a single variable there with the shellcode. But as you can see, it's trivial to take that code and convert it into a heap spray. And the fundamental idea in a heap spray is instead of having one copy of malicious code in your heap, you have literally thousands, okay, thousands and thousands. In fact, your entire heap, for the most part, contains malicious code. And of course, that's very easy to do in JavaScript. You create an array and you fill the array with your string. It's four lines of code, you can see. So this is the problem. And now I'll talk about the solution. Let me just say a little bit more. The problem of malicious data in your heap is not just one of embedded scripting language. In fact, many applications take data from untrusted sources. In this case, we're looking at a very benign looking picture on a web page. In fact, we don't know what the content of that picture has in it. An attacker can construct the JPEG image to perhaps have sequences of bytes in that image that are then malicious. And if I have enough copies of that, or if I have a large comment in that image that contains a sequence of bytes that happens to be malicious code, I'm again susceptible to these kinds of attacks. So the general problem that we're dealing with in this case is the attacker has placed a large content in the heap that really is malicious, shouldn't be there at all. And this has been documented before. This is not new. Sodaroff and Dowd had a Black Hat conference paper about this. So now I'm going to talk about Nozzle. Nozzle is a runtime heap spraying detection mechanism. So specifically, Nozzle is going to be running, and at runtime, it will determine if your heap is under attack from an attacker. Here I'm illustrating two things. On the x-axis, you see time as a function of the number of allocations and frees a program does. And on the y-axis, you see what Nozzle measures as a normalized surface area. And a better way to think about that normalized surface area is the answer to the question, how much of my heap, what fraction of my heap, do I think contains suspicious objects? So in this case, we're showing, this is in a browser, this is from Firefox, we're showing a normal website, so I visit a website, and this is Nozzle telling us that the fraction of the heap in a normal website is about maybe 5%, looks a little suspicious, a little sketchy, okay? But when we visit a malicious website that has a heap spraying enabled, we see immediately Nozzle detects that almost 98% of the heap contains malicious code, and therefore Nozzle will tell you that you're under attack. So that's how Nozzle works. That's what we're going to do with it. Now I'm going to explain how we do this, and I'm going to talk about our evaluation. So as I mentioned, Nozzle is a runtime system. So basically, it runs with your program. In this case, we're showing application has a number of threads. Nozzle can also run as a multi-threaded sub-application, I guess you could call it. The bottom line is every time the application does something, in this case, every time it allocates a new object, Nozzle potentially can scan that object. So we're not going to necessarily scan it immediately because one of the problems is we have to wait until the object is initialized by the attacker before scanning it will make any sense. Okay, so we wait for the object to be initialized. At that point, one of the Nozzle threads will scan the object and we'll make a determination. Is this a suspicious object or is this a benign object? Okay, and if it decides it's suspicious, it marks it as suspicious and it repeats. And so over time, Nozzle now has a model of the entire heap, all the objects in it, and some sense of what fraction of those objects are potentially suspicious or malicious. Okay. Now, one of the nice things about Nozzle is that we do this by hooking calls to the allocator, so either malloc free, heap alloc, heap free, et cetera. But one of the things about this strategy is we don't have to modify the existing program at all. So we've attached this to Firefox. We've attached it, as I'll show you, to Adobe Reader. In fact, you don't even have to modify. You don't have to modify the source. You can just use existing patching tools such as Detours, which is a Microsoft technology. So to answer the question, is this object suspicious? We have to drill down a little bit. And at the high level, it seems like a simple enough question to answer. So in particular, on the left here, we're showing a couple of things that look like objects. And on the surface, they look a lot like data, you know, all zeros. There's plenty of arrays that have all zeros. So you can ask the question, well, is this code or is this data? Well, unfortunately, in the x86 architecture, almost all sequences of bytes, you know, and we measure about 80% of all the objects allocated, actually, when interpreted as machine instructions, really almost completely interpreted as machine instructions. So in both these cases, these happen to be sequence of legitimate x86 instructions. And in fact, they have a property which is quite similar to what you'll see in malicious objects, which is a SLED, a no-op SLED. And let me mention a little bit more about that. So we can't just say we can easily tell whether an object's code or data. We have to drill down further. And in particular, in Nozzle, we're going to be looking for a property of the object which happens of the malicious code, which is the no-op SLED. And to explain this, we have to explain a little bit about what the attacker is trying to do. So in this case, the attacker has injected code. And part of that code is the SLED, and part of it is the actual exploit, the shell code. The reason they structure their attack this way is because in a heap spraying attack, the attacker doesn't know exactly where, when they do a jump, they're going to land in the object. They can't. They don't have enough control of the heap to precisely locate the object. So they have to sort of use a shotgun approach. And as a result, when they jump into that object, they're going to land somewhere, but it's almost certainly not going to be, they don't want to end up jumping directly into the shell code. Because if they jump into the middle of the shell code, then they won't execute the full exploit, whereas if they have to enter from the top, and that's why they have the SLED. So the typical model here is we have a large no-op SLED and a small amount of shell code, and what we're going to do in Nozzle is we're going to look for that pattern, that characteristic, and try to detect the SLED. Now, there's prior work on detecting SLEDs, and we reference it in the paper. Most of this work looks at SLED detection in network packets. And there's a big difference between finding SLEDs in network packets and actually finding SLEDs in heap objects. And we show in the paper that previous work in this area reports too many false positives for heap, for looking at no-op SLEDs in the heap. So we need a stronger technique, and this is what I'm going to describe next. So as I mentioned, the attacker wants to reach the shell code from a jump to any point in that object. Okay, that's kind of their strategy. That's why I have this big no-op SLED. And our goal then, when we do an analysis of that object as code, we're going to look at the control flow pattern through the object, and we're going to look specifically for certain blocks that are highly likely to be reached through control flow. And to make this more precise, we're going to use a technique from compilers, data flow analysis, to precisely determine which blocks here are the most likely to be reached. So I'll walk through this computation. Let me just mention, this figure on the right is a real object allocated on google.com. It looks a lot like real source code, I mean real machine code. In fact, the control flow pattern looks a lot like a normal, you know, normal routine. But in fact, it is just a random object, and in fact, some of the instructions here, the ones in red, are invalid instructions or kernel instructions, and so if they were to be executed by the attacker, they would actually cause the program to crash. Okay, so how do we measure, how do we determine if this object looks malicious? Well, we start by giving each block its own weight, and now we're going to use this data flow to basically propagate the weights forward through the control edges, okay, and look for an accumulation of weight. So at this point, it looks like the block at the bottom of the figure, it has the heaviest weight. And just looking at the flow through the figure, it looks like anywhere I enter that code, anywhere I jumped into that object, I'd almost always end up at the bottom. Certain edges here we eliminate because the outgoing edge there comes from an illegal instruction, so we won't propagate through that edge. But if we do a fixed point computation, which we do with the data flow analysis, we end up finding that the object to the right there is the object with the heaviest weight. And in fact, it's a somewhat suspicious a basic block here, because fundamentally, almost anywhere you jump into this object, in terms of 15 out of 17 different instructions, you'll end up, or you could end up, in that basic block. Okay. And that's an unusual pattern. You know, when you think about it, this is just a random object from a random a web server, essentially, or a web page, and yet it has this characteristic. And now that's what we're going to look for in Nozzle, and that's going to help us decide whether this particular object is malicious or not. So beyond the local metric I just described, we're also going to compute a global metric. That is to say, we compute the surface area, the threat of a particular object. We're going to accumulate, as I said, over all the heap. So one of the advantages in heap spraying is that the attacker is not just trying to get one object into the heap. If it was a one-object solution, that would be very hard to find. But we have the advantage that there are many, many objects in the heap, all of which have this characteristic for the heap spraying to work. And so we compute a normalized metric over the entire heap, and that's what we're going to measure and report with Nozzle. Okay, so that's the basic technique. That's our strategy for deciding whether something's malicious or not. Now let's talk about how we evaluate it. So the way you evaluate a strategy like this is you look at benign inputs and you decide whether or not the technique reports false positives. So for our benign inputs, we took 150 of the top websites from Alexa, and we also drilled down on 10 AJAX-intensive websites and did more user interaction with those websites. And as you'll see, we measured zero false positives with that set of inputs. On the other side, you want to make sure that for real heap spraying attacks, your technique finds those attacks. And to do this, we picked 12 published heap spraying attacks, and we used the code from those. And we also generated 2,000 additional attacks using Metasploit, which has mechanisms to generate heap sprays and to inject arbitrary shellcode. Finally, we want to measure the runtime overhead, and I'll talk a little bit about that. So let's start with the benign sites. These are the results of Nozzle's reported maximum normalized surface area over the 150 Alexa sites and over the 10 AJAX intensive sites. And what we see here is, and remember, this is the maximum reported normalized surface. So basically, over time, this can go up and down. The current surface area can go up and down, but this is the maximum over the entire run. And what we see here is the maximum in these applications ranges from around 5% up to, in one particular case of the Alexa, about 12%. One of the things about the maximum is that oftentimes early in the execution of the program, you'll see a spike in the maximum just because there are few objects allocated, and one somewhat suspicious object of that small heap might raise the maximum fraction. In the paper, we talk a little bit more about more sophisticated thresholds. But fundamentally, the point here is that if you set a threshold, a detection threshold, and say maybe if the heap is more than 50% full of suspicious objects, that's when we're going to raise an alert, then all these sites will not be alerted because they're way below that threshold. Okay, on the other end of the spectrum, we're looking at known attacks, malicious attacks. These are published attacks in IE, Firefox, and Safari. And we also ran the Metasploit attacks. And then surface area in all these attacks range from between 76% and 96%. So in fact, if we had the threshold set at 50%, Nozzle would always, it would detect all of these attacks in every case. Now, one of the big concerns here will be the runtime overhead. Because clearly, if we're looking at every object allocated, and we're doing a data flow analysis on every object allocated, that has to take some time. So what we're showing here is the runtime overhead of Nozzle on Firefox with, again, the 10 AJAX-intensive applications. The time here, the execution time, is normalized to the application running without Nozzle. Okay, and what we see here is if we have 100% sampling rate, that is to say we look at every single object, the overhead for Nozzle can be quite high. It's particularly bad, I guess, in the Maps application. It does a lot of allocation. But fundamentally, the nice thing about Nozzle is you can sample. You don't have to look at every single object if you don't want to. And if you reduce the sampling rate to 10% or even 5%, the overhead also significantly reduces. One of the advantages of sampling is that the attacker, because they want to fill the heap, really can't avoid a sampling strategy. The attacker can't allocate thousands of objects and have you miss all of them because you're sampling. You're gonna get 1 in 10 no matter what. So in practice, our experience is that you can enable Firefox with Nozzle with a fixed sampling rate like 5% or 10%, and you really don't know the difference. Now, beyond known attacks, one of the things that Nozzle is good for is dealing with new attacks. And in fact, when we published the paper, when we submitted the paper, it was February, early February, and about 2 weeks after that, there was a published heap spraying exploit against Adobe Reader and Adobe Acrobat. Now, we had never heard of this attack before we submitted the paper, and we said, well, let's see if we can detect this exploit in Adobe Reader. And in fact, we did. So it's very simple to use Nozzle. You have the Acrobat. This is the commercial shipping version of Acrobat Reader. We use Detours to inject the Nozzle DLL into that running application. And then we as a result, it produces a version of AcroRead, which is our version, the Nozzle version. We measured the overhead of this version. It's about 8% on average when viewing a large document, a 1,000-page document. And as I'll show you in just a minute, the surface area of a normal document is less than 10% typically. But I can do better than just show you a slide. I can actually show you a demo. So bear with me. This is I'm not a typical demo guy here. Okay, so here we have Adobe Reader rendering a beautiful PDF file. Looks like a beautiful sunset. This is, in fact, a PDF file enabled with a JavaScript exploit. It turns out that there's a heap spray embedded in this document. The heap spray is triggered when I exit the document. This is also a version of the Adobe Reader that has Nozzle working in it. And in fact, the Nozzle version that I have is a Nozzle sorry, a Nozzle runtime that broadcasts the current. Basically, the current surface area of the heap to any listener. So basically, we've created a client that just listens to every process that has an embedded Nozzle client. And essentially, here it's reporting on this particular process that about 5% of the heap looks suspicious at this time. Okay, so let's get back to our document, and let's quit. Okay, and as you see, Nozzle, as the heap spraying was underway, Nozzle detected that 75% of the heap, our threshold in this case is set at 75%. Nozzle detected that 75% of the heap was full with malicious objects. And in fact, if you look at the output from our client, you see that the fraction of the heap went from 5% to 65% to the maximum 75%. And now, basically, the process stopped because Nozzle has decided it's under attack. And here we have an out-of-the-box solution to an existing known attack on PDF Reader. Okay. All right, so that's the end of my talk. I'll just summarize. I just want to reiterate, heap spraying attacks are very important. Currently, they're in widespread use. Almost all new attacks are structured with a heap spray because it facilitates existing attacks. They're very easy to implement. You saw the JavaScript code, 10 lines of code, and they're very easy to retarget. So if I have an existing heap spray in a web page, I can move that attack to PDF Reader easily. Also, existing detection mechanisms, published mechanisms that try to identify malicious objects fail, and we've shown that in the paper. And I've also shown that Nozzle works on published heap sparing attacks, has acceptable runtime overhead. And something I didn't mention, it can be used both in online analysis. So basically, that would be I'd have my Firefox with Nozzle checking objects as I go. Or you could use it in a manner where you were scanning, essentially looking at URLs, looking at documents, and saying, is this document dangerous? You know, do I want to report this? And in a situation where you're trying to identify malicious sites or malicious documents, the overhead that we see in Nozzle wouldn't be as big a problem. Okay, so that's the end of my talk. If you want to see more about Nozzle, we actually have a video on Channel 9, or you can contact Peruj, Ben, or myself. Thank you.
Hi, Avi Rubin from Johns Hopkins. I thought your false negative numbers were pretty good. What I was wondering is, let's say now that you've published this, and let's say you were to put your code out there, how hard would it be for somebody to write a malicious attack that would pass? Could you do it, and do you think that's going to be the next step in the arms race?
Well, it certainly is an arms race, and I've had a number of discussions with people. I've had a lot of people say, well, this is a lot like virus detection. You know, as soon as you have a virus scanner on your, in your computer, the attackers create polymorphic viruses, and then you have to, and I won't argue that this isn't like that. This has the same character. You know, sure, we can detect existing heap sprays. In fact, in the paper, we outline about six different ways that people can subvert, essentially, our detection schemes. Some of them, I'm quite sure that with the escalation we can deal with. I think there are others that are more open to questions about that. I could list them. I mean, I have a list of attacks on Nozzle. Here you go. So,
but you are tying the attacker's hands quite a bit if you're not allowing long sleds and things like that. So I'm just curious how much harder you're making it for them.
Well, okay, that's a very good question. I think right now the bar is extremely low, the entry bar for an attacker, because as I showed you, the code is 10 lines, 4 lines. It's a for loop in JavaScript. All the solutions that really beat Nozzle require more JavaScript that's more subtle, okay? And you may or may not get it right. But I won't claim that we know of things. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because I don't want to tell everybody. But we know of things that we have to think about how we're going to solve. We haven't solved everything.
So my question is on a similar line. I want to push back on what you just said there. So it seemed like benign things were hitting about 10% of the heap looks sort of suspicious. So as an attacker, why don't I just use 10% of the heap as my spray?
Okay, that's a very good question. So we make an argument here around probability, okay? So one of the problems that an attacker has is if they fail 9 times out of 10, that means that your application is going to crash those 9 times. Okay, so Firefox, when they visit your page, will crash, or your Adobe Reader will crash, et cetera. When an application crashes a lot, things get sent back to websites saying blacklist, that sort of say, well, maybe we should blacklist this URL, et cetera. So there is an issue with the attacker that they're trying to maximize the effectiveness of the attack. Right? I mean, if they're willing, I'll put it a different way. If they're willing to have a 1% success rate, then Nozzle will not work.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is the strategy we currently employ, and we talk in the paper a little bit about other strategies. So currently, we start at the first byte, and if we see junk bytes, we things that are not x86 instructions, which doesn't happen very often, we scan those until we get to the first real instruction, okay? Now it is the case that the attacker, if they're clever, can actually have can offset their malicious code to a different offset with a different instruction sequence that gets implied by the offset. And we talk about that in the paper. There are mitigations. We don't do them in the current version of Nozzle, but there are ways to mitigate that.
And if you wait, I mean, you have to wait until the object is initialized.
Right.
So when do you then scan? If it's initialized with zeros and after 30 seconds, it is overwritten with
okay,
malicious code?
That's a good question. So is this time of check to time of use? This is the problem. It's another instance of that. One of the nice things in JavaScript, strings write once, essentially. So basically, the nice thing about JavaScript strings is that the person can't change them. If they choose not to use a string, then you have to worry about lots of updates, basically. And so one strategy, which again we don't do, but we could do, is if you see lots of writes happening, so you can use hardware performance counters. You could use that to trigger a scan, for example.
Okay, thank you.
Another way to think about this is in a language with a runtime system that has garbage collection, lots of writes will actually cause write barrier detections. So you could actually use the mechanisms that exist in the garbage collector already to detect this kind of behavior.
Cool, thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot.